The subject of giving and gifts comes up fairly often in the month of December, and we're talking about it again today. In Jennifer Iacovelli's book, Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day, we get a little of the science of well-being through giving, but generally we get an overview and strategies for giving some goodness. Maybe philanthropy and volunteering are not for you, but there are many ways to help other people. Jennifer Iacovelli spent more than 10 years working with the nonprofit sector on communications and fundraising slash development. She's a writer, speaker, and consultant and writes about philanthropy on the blogs Another Jennifer and Simple Giving Lab. Jenny, thanks for joining us today in the Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
The lab sounds intriguing. Is it an actual lab or just a blog name?
It's a blog name. Well, I have the writing lab and I have the Simple Giving Lab. So it's really, and it's named that way because I'm always experimenting with ideas and sharing thoughts and things like that. And it's just, you know, inspiration for giving.
So it's interesting the way you arrived here, though, because you were always trying to encourage people to give. And then it sounds like the equation got flipped at some point and you started to think about motivators.
Right. You know, and like you said, I've been in the nonprofit world for 10 years now, and you know, I've been a donor as well. So I sort of, you know, but I've been on both sides of the coin, and it's funny because this time of year is always the time of year that I would find myself, you know, in the past thinking, man, I have not given enough this year. You know, like this is the time of year you get all the letters in the mail from nonprofits and asking for money and things like that, which is great. It's the so-called giving season. But, you know, I always found myself at the end of the year thinking, you know what? Why did I not give more this year? Why do I only think about it at this time of year? And so I started to, my first step was to just start writing more about the topic of philanthropy and what it meant and interviewing people about how they give, you know, either with businesses or just everyday life. And I was looking for those motivators. What motivates people to give? Like, what has worked for them? And looking beyond just the, you know, writing a check or, you know, taking the time to volunteer, there's so many different ways you can give.
Well, and so many different places to give, too. The part of the nonprofit world in which you work can be a little tough to market. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, being in the nonprofit world, and I'm a director of development for an organization called Tedford Housing in Maine, and we work with, you know, homeless people and, you know, have shelters and supportive housing and stuff. And there are so many services that are out there for our clients and for other clients, but then there's also other organizations that do wonderful things, you know, for the environment or for animals. And there's so many options, or just, you know, even schools, universities, things like that. There's so many options out there for us to give to or to be involved with, and it can be really overwhelming to people and stuff. And for the nonprofits, it's hard on our end to be able to say, okay, well, here's why you should give to us, you know what I mean? Because that's sort of what it feels like we're doing a lot of the time. And I always find the key is to find, you know, as an individual or a company, however you're working, to find, you know, what are your motivators? What is your pull to give? What are the things that feel most important to you, the causes? How do you want to help? And figure out ways, you know, the organizations that are out there, ways that you can get involved and kind of go from there, because it's hard on both ends to reach, to get that, you know, relationship and the giving relationship, I guess.
To make the connection in the first place.
Sure. Right.
Talk about the specific frustrations, though, of working. You're generally working in the nonprofits focused on trying to get drug treatment for women. Is that right?
I have in the past. I've worked for several years in the substance abuse treatment field, and there's some stories in the books about that. And I talked about how, you know, it's hard because I always felt like, you know, I'm always trying to ask for money and trying to ask for support. And it's hard when people don't, you know, you need to tell the stories and connect them with what they're actually giving to and why there is a need. And then I realized, too, at some point, I talked about this in the book, how, you know, sometimes all it is that, you know, it's so hard for a woman, for example, to walk through the doors of a treatment center and say, I need help. I can't do this alone. And something as simple as you know, the person who's sitting at that front desk, smiling at them and treating them like any other human being, treating them with dignity and saying hi and welcoming them, something like that is enough to, or even somebody, you know, opening the door for them as they're leaving the office, something as simple as that can really, really actually change somebody's life. You know, people don't realize it, don't look at it that way.
That you can really offer something other than money. It just takes being nice and human to people sometimes is enough.
Exactly.
So you had a bit of a low point, it sounds like, about 6 years ago. What was your big frustration?
And I'll be honest with you, every now and then I still get this frustration. But the frustration came when I was realizing that I was saying no to donations. And I would have to, you know, when I would get donations in for, you know, various things at the time it was a treatment center that I was working for. And it was just, you know, not that we didn't appreciate it. It was just some, you know, things that the organization just couldn't handle. We didn't have the storage for or just didn't need at the time. And so I found myself thinking, well, there's this weird disconnect where these people really, really wanted to help. And we really needed help, but in other ways. So I found myself redirecting a lot, saying, okay, big, you know, thank you so much, but here's, you know, and I tried to give them other organizations to give to as well so they didn't feel like, you know, we were just turning them away. But I found myself redirecting and giving other options of how to give. And so it was that sort of disconnect that I found that frustrated me and made me want to think more about, okay, well, how can we bring this together? How can we get people to think about
Let's get the answer to the other side of a break. Simple Giving is the book. Jennifer Iacovelli, the author. We'll come back and talk more with Jennifer in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jennifer Iacovelli. She's worked for many years fundraising and communications for nonprofit groups. She's written a book called Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day. And we're not even talking about necessarily the expenditure of time or money, but something as simple as opening a door for someone. It really gets that simple. Now, the book is further subtitled 40 Ideas to Make Your World a Better Place. You can join us as we talk about the subject matter with Jennifer, 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So you were saying that you were having to redirect people. They were trying to give you things that you didn't have the space or the ability to handle, and trying not to let them go away hurt.
Right. Yeah. So it was just like I said, it was just that disconnect that I would see, and that was the thing that made me think more about giving, and then my own experience, like I said earlier, about at the end of the year, thinking to myself, wow, I probably could have given more if I just maybe spread out my donations throughout the year or thought more about giving throughout the year than just at the end during the holiday season.
You got a head start with Philanthropy Friday, I notice, on the Another Jennifer blog. What's that about?
I've been writing that series since 2011. And that was the exploration that I started. That's where I started it all. I feature people and businesses who incorporate giving into everyday life, just creative ways they do it. Sometimes it involves money and time. Sometimes it's just, making giving part of a business model. Sometimes it's just story. I've featured some kids, too, who just do amazing things to do fundraisers or just do really kind acts. And part of it for me when I started, it was just, like I said, my own exploration, but I was looking for ideas, and to get that inspiration to want to give more and explore different ways that I could give and show other people how they could do it as well.
You talk about the pull of giving. I mean, can it be sated? Can anybody ever feel like, okay, I'm done. That was good.
I don't know. Not for me, I'll say that. I always have this pull to give, and I always found, and I think it's true for a lot of people, and sometimes, the whole point of the book for me is to just make giving top of mind, to sort of honor the different ways that we have to give that are in front of us and recognize them. So we're not, rushing around at the end of the year thinking, oh, I got to give, I got to do this. Well, if we're always giving on a regular basis, then we don't have that stress at the end of the year, so I always, I always just felt like, okay, there's got to be something more that I can do, and when I realized, okay, there are really easy things that I can do right in front of me, it's just, I found a just more of a happiness, I guess, within me. And I talk a little bit about psychology of giving, but when you're giving on a regular basis, it makes you happier.
There are true benefits to the giver. We had a discussion with Jenny Santi on the same thing a week ago about her process of guided philanthropy. She's a philanthropy advisor. So,
right.
So some real true benefits to the giver. And it turns out it's not just humans, as you point out. Can you give us the example of geese in the book?
Oh, right. So there's this great, there's a whole chapter on the psychology of giving, which I just found it fascinating. Like, why do we have the pull and what's motivating us? And there was the an example of the Canadian geese. And, you know, we always see the geese when they're migrating and they're in that V, and that V shapes, and they're flying. And so there's been studies done, and it's shown how when one of the geese is straggling behind and maybe not keeping up, two more will actually slow down as well to make sure that the bird won't miss the flock. They'll still stay with the formation. So it's basically one of those things, and it's sort of a survival. I kind of call it the survival of the givingest, but it's also a survival thing too. Because if those two geese who stayed back with the one who was lagging behind, if they fall behind, you know, another one of their fellow geese is gonna stay behind as well. So it's sort of like a kindness thing, and it showed that, you know, even geese, animals, are going to help each other out, so that, you know, survival and they're helping out their fellow species, I guess.
Jennifer Iacovelli, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, her book is Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day. Does this, for some people, get into a bit of a logic loop, like I'm helping others, but it helps me? Oh, wait, I just turned it selfish again.
You know what? I don't think it's selfish at all. I don't think it's selfish to do things that are, you know, if you're doing meaningful giving, you know, it really should only strengthen you. And I talk about I have these different giving models in the book, and one of them is giving it forward. And part of that is, you know, involving other people with your giving. And, you know how it makes you feel, like if you involve other people, you're in inspiring other people to give. There's, you know, benefits all around, you know, to the giver, to the receiver, and to people who are just sort of watching you, because hopefully it's going to inspire them to do more giving themselves. And I don't think that's selfish at all.
Jennifer, does it make any difference how close you are to the receiver in distance, in relationship, in lifestyle, any of those things?
I think it can. I know the more, and I talk about meaningful giving in the book, you know, and as a lot of times we think about like charity and stuff, like, oh, there's a disaster, I have to just help and I'll send my, you know, text my $10 or whatever it is, because I feel like I have to. And then there's more meaningful giving when you have, you know, more of a connection to it, and you can, it's more meaningful when you have a connection to the cause, and you can also see what your impact is. So for example, if you know you're going to save a certain amount of lives by buying this, purchasing a mosquito net through an organization, that's something that's very tangible. I talk about, you know, how I purchased faucets, you know, my donation purchased faucets for a community that didn't have access to safe water through WaterAid. So the other piece of that, to make it more meaningful, is to, like I just said, is to involve other people. And there have been studies where, you know, people feel better and are happier when they get, you know, if they get, like, say, a Starbucks gift card and are able to spend it on somebody else, but they're even happier when they spend it on somebody else and they actually spend the time, you know, sitting down in the coffee shop and, you know, drinking the coffee with them.
So you mentioned the faucets through WaterAid. I want to hear a little more about your – you actually traveled to Nicaragua with WaterAid, didn't you?
Yes. And I had an opportunity – and that was basically – that relationship with WaterAid came about. You know, I was a donor, but I really was connected with them through my blog – and through Mom Bloggers for Social Good, which I talked about in the book as well. And, you know, I represented Mom Bloggers for Social Good, and went down to Nicaragua with WaterAid America just to see their programs on the ground and see the work that they were doing. And, you know, my job down there was we did a Twitter chat on World Water Day, just, you know, and I took pictures and I did blog posts and I did a vlog down there. And so it was a really wonderful experience for me. So I'm writing about my experiences and my reactions and just talking about the work that they did. And it was a really, you know, it was a life-changing experience. I've never been, it was the first time traveling to a developing country. And just, you know, we stayed in the community, you know, in somebody's, this wonderful woman's house, you know, no electricity. The toilet was, we had to travel to get to the toilet and to the water and stuff like that. It was pretty amazing. And it was, you know, my job as a blogger was to share that experience. So it changed my, you know, sort of perspective on things, but I got to share that with other people too, which was pretty amazing.
It does sound amazing. The book again is called Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day. Further subhead, 40 Ideas to Make Your World a Better Place. Jennifer Iacovelli wrote it. She's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. And you can join the discussion as we talk about the process of giving and how it can actually make ourselves feel good and make the world a better place at the same time. 800-838-3760 by phone if you'd like to join us. Maybe there's a story you'd like to share about your own giving at some point. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So Jennifer, six models of giving in the book. How'd you come up with these?
Well, it basically came through my Philanthropy Friday series. At some point I thought, I've been writing this for years and I have all these amazing connections and stories, and I went back and I just started looking at them, and I kind of jotted down, you know, on a piece of paper just the different category. I started categorizing them and figuring out, you know, what are the themes here? How are these people giving? And because I, you know, there was a lot of similarity in certain ones. And so I came up with six. And you know, it's, which is everyday acts of kindness, sort of like a new approach to traditional philanthropy, like writing a check, shopping with a conscience, taking action on your passion, you know, just people just really taking action on the causes that they believe in, giving as a business model, and then the giving it forward that I mentioned earlier as well.
So starting with the everyday acts of kindness, we talked a bit about this. It's as simple as opening doors for people. Does
right.
kindness tend to beget kindness from your experience?
Absolutely. And it's funny, there's been studies on that too. I mean, kindness is contagious, whether you, and a lot of times the everyday acts of kindness are anonymous. It's just nice things that you do, you know, which is really, you know, like I said, you know, opening up a door, it could be paying for, you know, somebody's coffee behind you or somebody's toll. It could be paying somebody a compliment. And it's just, you know, nice things that you can do every day, and whether people realize it or not, whether or not that you are actually the person who did it, but it feels good. And, you know, the person, if you've ever been that person who's the recipient of a kind act, you know how good that feels. And it often makes you want to do something else for somebody.
How do you take in stride, though, the people who don't notice? I mean, are sometimes the givers easily daunted by people who, for example, don't say thanks when you hold the door open for someone?
Right. Well, you know what? The way I look at it is, you know, and there are people like that, obviously, and I always think, you know what? I don't know what's going on in that person's life, but maybe later on it'll dawn on them. Hey, that person actually, like, I'm having a bad day, but that person earlier did actually open the door for me. Maybe that was the only sort of positive thing that happened. But I don't think it should discourage people, because I think, you know, you're going to hit 9 times out of 10, it's going to make somebody smile.
Mm-hmm. And besides, you know, you're not going to get instant gratification from everything you do in life, certainly
right.
not from giving
it's
like this.
It's the act that counts.
Right. So doing this in an organized way, you mentioned, and I should point out, there's a lot of resources given in each chapter in the book, lots of websites to go to for research or for actual mechanisms for giving. And you tell us about Kind Spring in here. What is that?
Kind Spring, yeah, it's a really great website, kindspring.org. And it really, it's just, its sole purpose is to celebrate small acts of anonymous kindness. And everything's anonymous. So even if you, you know, you can, when you set up like a free account, just, you know, like log in, it's, you actually get an anonymous username. So, and it's basically people who are just sharing kind acts that either were done to them or that they did, or just stories that they've heard about. And so there's all these really great ideas. But I also found out for the, when I was, you know, interviewing for the book, that sometimes, you know, people will read and be like, hey, that I was the person that I was like the receiver of that kind act. And it's brought all these like neat little communities together. But it's a really great place to go just for uplifting stories or just some inspiration.
There's another one in this chapter too about Alex Radulich and ARC.
Yes, the ARC Project Now, and ARC stands for Acts of Random Kindness. And Alex and his buddies, they're college students, college age, and they have actually, and actually they've recently raised enough money to actually purchase an RV. And they go around and they travel, I think they did it over the summers, and so, you know, for a few months out of the year. And they'll travel, and all they do is acts of kindness. And, you know, his whole thing is, you know, he realized, you know, what he just wanted to make more of an impact. And he did one act of kindness and talked about it on YouTube one time and got this huge response and decided he just wanted to go out and spread kindness. And so they'll do things like, you know, they'll, it's like a Ronald McDonald House, you know, they'll visit and they'll bring, you know, they'll cook dinner for everybody there. And then they'll, you know, grab a family that they really connected with and then take them on like a shopping spree at Target or something like that. And everything is financed, you know, they've got these, they've got different grants that they receive to do. There's like these small micro grants for actual kindness acts, and I have some resources in the books where you can actually look these up. But, you know, they're college kids. They don't need a whole lot of money to live and to survive. So they, you know, they raise this money and they just go out and they spread kindness. It's a really neat thing, and they share it on their website as well.
Now, lest somebody think, oh, wait, I can't afford to do that either. You do have some very simple ideas that do involve the expenditure of money, but not very much. Put some coffee on the wall is one of your expressions. What does that mean?
Right. And that was the thing. Actually, I think that was from Kindspring that I got that from. And so put the coffee on the wall. You know, we've heard of people who, you know, buying a coffee for, you know, somebody behind you or something like that. But this is sort of, you know, when you're buying your coffee or sandwich or whatever it is, buying one extra and just saying, put it on the wall. Which is basically a code for saying, and sometimes I think this has actually happened in California where they would put like a ticket or something on like a bulletin board. And it was for anybody who would come in and, you know, a homeless person, somebody who just, you know, was cold maybe in the wintertime and just didn't have enough money and could just grab or just having a bad day and just could grab that coffee or sandwich or whatever it is for that day. And it's sort of a, you know, and usually when you put the coffee on the wall, you're not going to know who the recipient is. But the feedback that I've received is that, you know, the people who use this are very just thankful to have that opportunity to just be able to get that coffee or sandwich or whatever it is.
Sure. You just put it out there for them to use later, whoever they
right.
may be. So that moves us into chapter two, the second of the six models of giving in the book, the new approach to traditional philanthropy. And for you and the stuff you describe about yourself, Jennifer, it sounds like philanthropy is kind of like a muscle you toned for yourself.
That's I like that. That's a good way to describe it. And I had a giving pledge I talked about on my blog for a while where I just said, okay, I'm going to give to a different nonprofit every month, and I just. It was making myself accountable. And it was a really great experience to do because I could see how I was choosing who to give to and how, like, if I did the research or a lot of times the opportunities would come to me as I went along. And I realized, you know, after a while, I wasn't even thinking about my donation. It just sort of came to me. So it is. It's sort of like the more you practice, the more, you know, the more you train, the bigger muscles that you have.
Right. By income levels, this is one of the interesting parts of this chapter, though. Who gives the most in America?
Right. And it's usually, and this is pretty consistent. I just saw a recent study come out, is usually the people who have the least are the ones who give the most amount, you know, the biggest percentage of their income.
Really? So,
I see that every day in my own work.
I wonder if that's just because it's hard to spend as much money as people who are fabulously wealthy have.
Well, and you know, and people have to be very, in, I guess, you know, when you think about it, the more money that you have to be really, you know, I think you have to put some thought and effort into where am I going to put this, and, you know, how can I make the most impact.
Much more to talk about with Jennifer Iacovelli. Her book is called Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day. Further subtitle, 40 Ideas to Make Your World a Better Place. We'll come back and talk more about what you can do if you want to help out in the world, and talk about Jennifer's 6 models of giving. We'll come back to Jennifer Iacovelli and you on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jennifer Iacovelli, who's been working in the nonprofit sector for about 10 years now on communications and fundraising or development. She's a writer, speaker, and consultant, writes the blogs Another Jennifer and Simple Giving Lab. And we're talking about the season of giving. December, right? Nope, it's the rest of the year. It's all the year. The book is called Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day, with a further subtitle, 40 Ideas to Make Your World a Better Place, which includes another number here, 6 models of giving that Jennifer has developed. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with more numbers, 800-838-3760. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We're just talking, Jennifer, about income levels, the fact that as a percentage of income, people who make less give more. And was that true during the recession as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There have been studies that have been pretty consistent, and pretty consistent globally as well, which is kind of interesting. And part of it could be that a lot of the people, maybe they've had experiences in their lives that, you know, other people have helped them, and they just want to give back and pay it forward. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
While we're talking demographics, and it goes beyond just the income levels, I mean, how different is giving between age groups? I mean, as the millennials come onto the main stage now and the baby boomers head off to retirement, are there big differences in how they approach giving and philanthropy?
There tend to be. And I think, you know, the younger the millennials and stuff, they really want to do. They want to take action. They want to do stuff and see what their work is being helpful. And you see a lot of, they use social media a lot more and maybe do, you know, micro philanthropy and, maybe small amounts, but they're, you know, really spreading the word via social media and stuff. Whereas, you know, the older generation still, and I see this a lot in my work, they want the letter. They want, you know, they'll write a check. People still come to the office where I work and come in and just bring a check and say, here's my donation for the month or whatever. So there's definitely some differences.
So for people like you, though, involved in development, it sounds like that's a real trick to make sure you're connecting with people in the ways in which they like to be connected. So on one hand, it might be an app. On another hand, it might be the personal letter.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I, as a development professional, I try to do a little bit of everything. I sort of do, integrated marketing and, you know, and development. So, you know, the e-newsletters and still doing paper newsletters and still doing the traditional letter, that you mail at the end of the year. But, you know, that's also an electronic form as well that can come into the email. And I know a lot of organizations have found a lot of, luck with texting and things like that. So there's so many different things that I try to just incorporate it all somehow into the communications to give everybody a chance to be involved.
Now, you talk in this part of the book, in the new approach to traditional philanthropy, about giving circles. What are giving circles, and how do they help you give?
Yeah, and this is one of my favorite ways to give if you're going to be giving money. And it's basically, like that whole, at the end of the year, I didn't give enough. Well, what if you took some time to create your own giving circle? And there's actually an example. There's the Giving Circles Fund. You can actually join a giving circle online, or you could create your own. And, you know, it could be friends, colleagues, people you work out with, whatever it is, and just say, hey, we're going to put aside, you know, it could be as little as $10 a month. But if you have a big enough group, you know, that amount of money is going to accumulate after a while. And what you can do after, you know, quarterly or once a year, twice a year, whatever it is, sit together and say, okay, we've got this money. Now what are we going to do with it? What kind of impact do we want to make? Who do we want to benefit from this? And then you could, you know, as a group, choose a cause, choose an organization, and figure out what you're going to do with the money. It's a really great way to not only give, but think about the impact you want to make.
Okay, the third model of the six of giving that you provide in the book, and this is one that'll really ring true, I think, this time, if you're shopping with a conscience. That ought to resonate this season. What are some of the first steps?
Yeah, and shopping with a conscience, I mean, it's basically, okay, let's think about the products we're buying and who we're buying them from. And, you know, and their environmental impact, things like that. So I always say, you know what, the simple way to start is to shop local. You know, it support your local merchants and you know, because you're supporting your local economy. And you can also do simple things like, you know, choosing fair trade products. Like, and you could be in the grocery aisle, you know, the coffee aisle or whatever it is, and choosing fair trade products. Or, you know, and there's a lot of, especially, and I have on my website, I have a gifts that give back guide list. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of products out there and companies that you can purchase from that actually, you know, by buying from them, you're supporting, you know, you could be supporting a number of causes with the purchase. It could be, you know, proceeds are donated. It could be just the people who are making the product or you're helping their families, whatever it is. There's plenty of ways to find gifts that actually give back as well.
How, on the shop local part of things, I mean, how do you shop locally? I can hear about a quarter of America saying this now, if your downtown has been gutted of local shops.
Right. Well, and I'm lucky, I mean, in Maine, Main Street is thriving and has lots of, where I live, and has wonderful shops and things like that. So it can be tough. There's actually, like, for example, there in one of the stories in the book is called Nearby Registry. And it's sort of a way to shop locally online, which kind of sounds kind of funny, but it's a local business. She's in New Hampshire, and I think she's expanding to different parts of the country as well. But you know they're local merchants. So even if you don't have a great, you know, community that has a lot of, you know, local shops and things like that, you can actually go online and find, you know, small mom-and-pop businesses and support them that way as well.
There are some amazing concepts in the Shopping with a Conscience section, like tothemarket.com. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's great. I had the chance to meet Jane at a conference last year, and she's really passionate about just supporting survivors of various things, abuse, conflict, disease, people who have just gone through, and this is worldwide, just you can support people from actually different parts of the world, including the United States. And people who've just gone through some terrible situations but are pulling themselves out of it. And so you can purchase survivor-made goods on the website, To the Market. And you know whatever you buy from that website is going to support, you know, someone or a family in some way, and it's going to make a really great impact. And I will say that the goods on there, like, are just absolutely beautiful.
So you say in Shopping with a Conscience, plan your conversion. What does that entail?
I'm sorry, say that one more time?
You say you should plan your conversion to Shopping with a Conscience. So what does the conversion entail?
Well, it's sort of, you know, plan. When you're shopping with a conscience, and I talk about how, like, sometimes it's easier said than done. You know, sometimes you're just out and trying to figure out, you know, you're not always thinking, you just need to buy a toothpaste. You know what I mean? You're not necessarily thinking about, okay, well, how am I going to make an impact on the world with this purchase? Sometimes you're just out and about and you're not thinking. So when you're planning what I mean by planning your conversion is basically, you know, take it step by step. Think about, okay, you know, I'm not going to make a difference with every single purchase that I'm going to make, but I can start by, say, looking at the cleaning products that I buy and figuring out, well, how can I be, you know, better on the environment? Or let me look at some of the regular products that I buy, the companies that I buy from, and take a look at the impact that they have, their carbon footprint, whatever it is, and figuring out how you want to start to shop consciously. Or it could just be saying, you know what, I'm going to shop, you know, at this local shop, at the local farmer's market every week instead of, you know, getting my veggies at the grocery store. Simple things like that. But taking it step by step.
Okay. We have a call on the line. It goes by Mary in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jennifer Iacovelli, the author of Simple Giving.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I had a sort of a nice experience at Trader Joe's last week. I'm what we lovingly called the golden years person, and I was checking out a lot of groceries, and at the end of the counter, the checkout guy had put my baklava frozen, and a man my own age and his wife walked by, and he said, oh, baklava, and his wife, nah, come on, let's go. So I thought about it for a second, and then I said to the cashier, I'll be right back. I took the baklava, I crawled out to the parking lot, I found him, and I just handed it to him. I said, you should do something nice every day. Merry Christmas. And he looked at me for a moment, unbelieving. So I went back into Trader Joe's, and the cashier couldn't believe I'd done it, so he said, we'll give you another one. And I said, no, you defeat the purpose. I enjoyed that. Next thing you know, he gets a young kid to go down the aisle, and the kid thinks he said broccoli, not baklava.
No.
So he comes back with fresh broccoli and three frozen. And we said, no, it's baklava. And he had this blank look. He said, no, it's in the pastry aisle. Well, he was gone for the longest. He came back with the baklava, and he just looked stunned. Said, I didn't ever see this before. So we put it, and they gave it to me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, it was wonderful. And anyway, you should do something or say something nice every day. Just say you look nice to a perfect stranger.
Huh.
Right. It doesn't hurt you.
No, it really doesn't. Thanks for the story, Mary. Appreciate it.
Getting old ain't for sissies. Don't worry.
No,
it's not.
Take care. Take care. That's a wonderful story, a real, you know, on-the-spot kind of thing.
It is.
It's interesting, too, because since she mentions it, she mentioned Trader Joe's, so she was in Medford, and Medford, Oregon is still a small enough town that there are letters to the editor fairly regularly from people who want to thank the person who picked them up in the parking lot or who paid for their groceries when they were $10 short or stuff like that. So it does happen.
That's wonderful. I know it's funny how we get surprised when things like that happen. I hope we get to the point where it's not a surprise. We just do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So let's see, the number four model of giving in the book, taking action on your passion. This apparently was a little trickier for you than you thought.
Yeah, and it's like I said, this is why I started the Philanthropy Friday series, and this is why I have a lot of stories in the book to illustrate these things, because, like, let's see how other people are doing this. But taking action on your passion is just, you know, people who just, you know, you really have that drive, and you really need to do something about it. I talk about different, you know, a friend of mine she started a place called Sensibility Gym, and it's a parent-led sensory gym for special needs kids like hers. And she has two kids who are on the autism spectrum, and she just really saw a need to have a place for not only her kids to go, you know, where they could have the special gym equipment and things like that, like the sensory stuff that they needed, that wasn't, you know, just in the therapy or in the school system. It was just a place where they could just go, not only for the kids, but for the parents as well, to get that, to meet other parents and, you know, get that mutual support and talk and the whole thing. So she started this gym. Did a lot of, you know, and it's nonprofit. A lot of it is, you know, a lot of time and effort on her part. A lot of work. She has the board of directors and the whole thing. But she really, that's just a prime example of, you know, I see a need. I see how this could benefit people, and even my kids. And she just went for it.
And then there's a giving as a business model, which you say is not about corporate social responsibility. So then what?
Right. I think, you know, a lot of time, you know, in corporate social responsibility, and hopefully the, you know, company that we buy for will have some sort of policy and stuff. But then I'm really talking about giving as part of the business model. It's just part of what who they are. And I stress to people, if they have their own business, to sit back and think about, how can I do this? You know, what is the best way for me to do this that makes sense? But I have some wonderful examples, and one of them I always like to talk about is Mitt Scoots. And they have this get plus give plus employ model. So, you know, they sell socks. You buy socks from them. When you buy a pair of socks, they also give a pair of socks to, like, a homeless shelter or somebody in need. And they also, within their company, which is based in Texas, they employ people who are homeless or previously homeless, who are just, you know, need a job and are trying to get back on their feet.
Well, there's a lot of stuff packed into a book that really only measures 4x6 in paperback, but it is called Simple Giving for a Reason. So well done, and thanks for joining us, Jennifer Iacovelli.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care.